The show is sponsored by 321 Music. If you have a vintage musical instrument for sale, go to 321music.co.uk and let us make you an offer.
Well, the way they pick TV shows is they make one show. That show's called a pilot. Then they show that one show to the people who pick shows. And on the strength of that one show, they decide if they want to make more shows. Some get chosen and become television programs. Some don't. Become nothing.
Hello and welcome to Drop the Pilot, a podcast dedicated to TV pilots that became nothing. I'm Jimmy.
And I'm Martin. Today we'll be discussing 17th Precinct, which didn't air but was intended to be part of NBC's 2011-2012 season. They decided to go with Grimm instead. It was written by Ronald D. Moore, who wrote for a bunch of Star Trek, including the movies Generations and First Contact, and created the reboot of Battlestar Galactica and the current Apple TV Plus show For All Mankind. It was directed by Michael Reimer, who directed episodes of Battlestar Galactica for Moore, as well as Hannibal and the movie Queen of the Damned.
17th Precinct stars Jeremy Bamber, James Callis, Eamon Walker and Stockard Channing, Kristen Crook, I think that's how you pronounce it, I don't know, don't care, from Smallville. She was hired to be the wife of Bamber's character, but she didn't appear in the pilot.
You know, most people have absolutely no idea that TV is written by humans and not just somehow automated. And when I was about 12 or 13, because I'm cool, I was reading a Star Trek magazine that had an interview with Ron Moore about the plans for doing a story arc for the upcoming sixth season of Deep Space Nine. And there was a picture of him. And it blew my mind because I assumed that if TV did have writers and it wasn't just automatically generated, then surely they'd all be in their 60s. But this guy was pretty young. I still am absolutely massive Deep Space Nine fan. Not as much as I used to be. I've lost a bit of weight. Battlestar Galactica, never really seen the original and wasn't really taken by the reboot when it was first announced. I remember there was a trailer for it during Farscape for Peacekeeper Wars. It just seemed like hokey. You know, or they're trying to find Earth. That's dumb. I live on Earth and it's rubbish.
Yeah, and also we've seen Red Dwarfs. So.
You know, I was a moody teenager, you know, so I was quite precocious. But I did end up watching the miniseries and was completely blown away by it. Their first scene ends with a piece of shrapnel from an exploding space station knocking the camera out. And it was like, you can't do that. That's unheard of. And the people who say it got rubbish towards the end are wrong. I've rather enjoyed For All Mankind, which is a very different sci-fi show that he's currently doing. And he's definitely, you know, someone who I've, you know, been a fan of and kept an eye on whatever he's worked on. I even watched a couple of episodes of Outlander, despite the accents.
Yeah, I watched the pilot episode of that and I was like, nope, I'm out. Yeah, I like this. I'm quite surprised I like this. Because I think it's like it's a cracking premise. I really like the idea of it. And this was like binned in favour of Grimm. And as someone who watched the first two seasons of that show before bailing, NBC made the wrong decision. I mean, Grimm was like a modest hit for them. It got six seasons and 123 episodes. And who knows how this would have fared. This might have failed, like, miserably, but still.
I didn't really like this. But I feel I should explain that it's probably one of my favourite pilots that I have watched for this podcast. But as a show, I don't think it really worked for me. But I would say I would rather watch this than another episode of Ice or another pilot that's just dull.
Yeah.
You know, this was definitely in the noble failure category of pilots. It didn't work, but it bloody well tried something. You know, it asked the question, what would the world be like, you know, what would policing be like if we used magic instead of science? And it turns out, exactly the same, except, let's analyse it with the magic thing rather than the electronic thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's have a weird round hand thingy shooty thing instead of a gun shooty thing.
Yeah, it's a talisman.
You know, it didn't really give us very much to go on. It's just...
Well, yeah, but to be fair, it is a pilot. And it is just setting up.
That is when they need to win us over, Jimmy.
No, I know, but like I said earlier, they had hired someone to play Jeremy Bamber's wife. So they were clearly doing... They clearly had other things planned. They just didn't want to put it all into the pilot.
It's like they came up with this really fresh original concept and we get lumped with a jaded cynic who is partnered with a rookie.
Yeah.
It's like, really? You could do anything. You've literally got magic and you're going for the cliche.
Yeah, but she, right at the very end, she's like, yeah, okay, you're fine. I like you.
That's what happens every time a jaded old cynic is partnered with a rookie.
Not in a pilot. Not necessarily in a pilot. Sometimes it can take episodes before that happens.
No, but it happens a lot, is my point.
No, I know. I know.
It kind of felt like it was being pulled in two directions. Like, they came up with this world of magical realism, and at the same time, they were trying to make it appeal to CSI viewers.
Yeah, it does sort of pander to that a little bit. CSI and also Law and Order.
Yeah.
Because there's two different stories going on, and Law and Order did that a lot. No, I'm with you on that, but compared to a lot of the shite that we've watched, Martin, I think this can be classified as not garbage.
Absolutely.
So, Martin.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing? We're going to shake things up a little. This show has been going on for 3 years now, and I think it's time for a change. So, the change is, Martin's going to read the synopsis.
Drop the pilot, the Jimmy Can't Be Fucked edition.
Yes, absolutely. I'm recording a radio show later on today. I'm recording another podcast tomorrow. Jimmy cannot be fucked. No, it's not that. Right, carry on.
Donald Pun... This isn't working.
You can't even get the first fucking sentence out.
Donald Pynchon, Excelsior's executive prophet, a city government official concerned with making and interpreting citywide prophecies, is murdered in a North Beach back alley on September 23rd, 2011. Detectives Longstreet and Boson, played by Jamie Bamber and James Callis, who are both Jameses, unlike you.
Yep, damn straight.
Are tasked with the case and determined that his murder was intentionally brutal, and it was unobserved due to a magical charm which deadened sound in the alley. It turns out that 15 years previously, Pynchon was in Mendocino, California, when relying on a prophetic vision testified it against Lionel Dixon on charges of rape and murder. Dixon received a life sentence of magically reliving his victim's final experiences after Dixon was acquitted 13 years later, he was magically given a new life as a child. In an effort to make up for the mistaken identity, Dixon instead was driven to murder both Pynchon and the acquitted judge.
Right, so that's like one story. We've got more of it to go, but same story.
What did you think of the sort of the saga cell, as they call it? Which, where they sort of had the voiceover go, what if technology was magical and the world was different? which kind of felt like they slapped on at the last minute because it was all the same shots from the next scene.
That's true.
It kind of felt like an executive went, I don't understand why they're using ones and not calculators. Can you put an explanation in for me?
Yeah, even though they explain it like in an actual show. But, yeah, Saga Cell must be there.
I once heard it described as the old lady living in a trailer test.
Mm.
You know, you need the old lady living in a trailer to understand the show and be able to tell her friend what it's about. Like, oh, it's the program about the lady who solves the crimes by looking at their bones.
This might have been one that didn't last very long, like Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
Buffy's To Each Generation
That was gone
monologue.
By season 3.
Yeah. I think even season 2 it disappeared.
Season 1 it was the weirdo voice. Season 2 it was Giles. And
then Tony Head, yeah. Then it vanished.
Yeah.
Because the show became something different.
Mm-hmm.
Once, spoilers for Buffy, once Angel became Angelus during season 2, I think they kind of dropped it because the show was something different. The opening scene, the Saga Cell, didn't need that. But the opening scene, I can't remember how does it start now.
Donald Pynchon, Excelsior City's executive office, city government official concerned with...
Like, stop. I liked that scene. That wasn't something I'd seen before. Someone get murdered, yes, obviously. I see that all the time. I live in Scotland. But, like, when things get silent and then the dog is barking and you can't hear the dog because the dog is outside the silence bubble or whatever the feck it's called. I liked that. I don't think we really had to see him getting stabbed 20 gazillion times, but, you know.
The whole thing with the blood floating around wasn't very obvious what they were doing at first, but they seemed to...
It didn't make sense to me at all, actually. It went into like a boob shape, and they said, that's the lung. It came from the lung. And I'm like, what?
Jimmy, you just see boobs everywhere.
I do.
So, I did like that it made sense to them and they weren't overly explaining it. It's like, right, they're doing their thing, and the whole bit with, oh, have you got this? Or if you haven't got this, tell me, because, you know, I don't want to get blood on me. You know, that sort of felt natural.
Yeah, because if you watch something like the pilot to something like CSI, there's always someone new that turns up. So the tech people can go, I'm going to do this because I'm doing this and that and this and this and I need this for that. And that's just to tell them and the audience, whereas this doesn't really force it down your throat.
Did you ever see that Kevin Spacey movie? 21, where they go and count cards at casinos.
Oh, you mean the one that was controversial because the main character was played by a white man when in real life he was Asian? You mean that movie?
Yeah, they explain like bioneuro sensors and stuff like it's, you know, a plot from Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah. And then a lot of the times in TV shows, they tend to go over it like again and again sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Especially older shows, it's like, we're going to explain this thing every single episode just so you know, but we're consistent, and just so you can get it into your thick skull, readers, viewers.
What did you think of the idea of the necromancer character?
Absolutely pointless.
It seemed like a really good idea on paper, but as soon as you introduce it, it's like, well, either the victim's just going to tell you who did it or be completely useless.
Mm.
And they were completely useless.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, characters like that are obviously going to be used later on, but in the pilot, it's like, well, give her something to do, apart from, you know, bang the boss, which is also a cliche in itself.
Well, it's like, I mean, you make a good point, because it's like the character of Locke is hardly in the pilot to Lost.
Yeah. Yeah, because he doesn't really come into his own until, like, episode 3, 4?
Yeah.
If you split the pilot episode into two, Walkabout is episode 4 and that's his episode.
He just smiles with an orange.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we see the Golden Gate Bridge, which is good because it tells us that Excelsior is in San Francisco.
No, Excelsior is San Francisco.
Exactly. That's what I said.
Yeah, it's not.
And then we see
there is no San Francisco. There is only Excelsior.
And then we see the Golden Gate Bridge, so we see that Excelsior is San Francisco.
Dick.
But it's also covered in moss, which
it has no legs, it's floating.
So I guess they're saying that they don't use it if they've got magic, despite the fact they all have cars.
Yeah, I don't understand that. I didn't understand the moss and the overgrowth on the bridge.
It was just really, ooh, look how we've got magic and we're another world, another dimension, another time and space, and parallel universe falling on its face.
Right, okay.
That's the theme tune to Bucky O'Hare and the Toad Wars.
I know that. Martin did watch it. So would you like to continue with the rest of the synopsis, Martin?
Unconnected with the Pynchon case, DCI Wilder Blanks begins seeing visions related to the Stoics, a group dedicated to the destruction of magic in favour of reason, rationality and science. A laughable prospect, but one about which they are deadly serious. 12 years previously, the Stoics committed a series of murders to further their cause, but have neither been seen nor heard of since. Blank retrieves Rizzo from her dissatisfying work in another precinct to help with the Stoics. So we meet Stockard Channing and S.E. Morales' character. She dead names him.
Yeah, that's true. But the issue I have is we're progressive storyline. It's like, we have a trans person in here. We have a trans man. This is a man who used to be a woman. His name is Liam. Don't call him Lisa. That's his dead name, as you said. But she used magic to change her body into a man.
Yeah, because they have magic instead of science. So everything is different and all the technology is done with magic.
I know, but he says the line, I am no longer Lisa inside or out. It's not just like she would have had a sex change operation to become a man. Her entire body, like everything has changed to become a man. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, because it's magic and not science.
I know, but I just didn't like that at all. It's like they were trying to be clever with it and I just thought it was a bit sort of insulting. I think it was done here for exposition purposes as well.
Yeah,
just to tell
exactly.
It was the quickest and easiest way for them to do it. To tell us.
You know, arguably portraying a trans character who's just magically transformed into the other gender is progressive because they're not presented as a freak or monster, or, you know, a disgusting thing.
No one mentions it. Nobody else mentions it apart from Rizzo.
But then at the same time, you know, you had shows like Ugly Betty, which were presenting, what is her name? Mystique.
Rebecca Romijn, can't remember what the character's name was.
You know, and they presented a trans character as a beautiful woman. But having discussed it with the trans community, that's not considered particularly great either. What I would say as well about the portrayal of a trans character is for years and years, there was a whole argument about, and I'm talking like late 90s, and like, Ron Moore used to do Q&As in the AOL chat rooms, and they still exist online. And because I'm cool, I've read them. And, you know, for years and years, there was, when are we going to have a gay character on Star Trek? And, you know, there were some half-hearted attempts at various points. There was a first season Next Generation script that got scrapped. There was a character in First Contact who was supposedly going to be gay, and then that, you know, whether that was written and taken out or just never written, you know, is unsure.
Was that supposed to be Hawk?
Yeah.
Lieutenant Hawk.
I can't remember if he was a gay character or if they made him a gay character in the novels. But I remember being some talk about that. But anyway, Ron Moore's response was, yeah, there probably should be, but are we the right people to tell that story? You know, really, it should be someone who has more, you know, knowledge of that than we do, which, you know, is kind of a honest position.
Absolutely.
So, you know, whether this would have been something they dealt with as the show went on, you know, who knows?
You haven't finished the synopsis.
No, I'm just reading, finding my place.
Yeah.
Blank's partners Barkley with a rookie detective, Jimmy Travers, due to the latter's potential as an initiative savant, investigating a nuisance case in an apartment building.
Barkley 2 seconds. Intuitive.
What did I say?
Initiative.
Oh, fuck's sake, I was on a roll.
I know. No, it's just one line. Come on, you're fine. You're doing great, actually. I'm proud of you, Martin. You can do it. You can finish it. Come on, Martin!
Due to the latter's potential as an intuitive savant, investigating a nuisance case in an apartment building, Barkley and Travers unwittingly allow the Stoics access to murder an otherwise protected tenant, a college professor of advanced magical engineering and biology with an emphasis on power plant design. It is revealed that the Stoics use mechanical rather than true magic, which nothing in their world can defend against. The professor was killed using the Stoics' means, something called a bullet.
Dun, dun, dun! That's the end. I actually really did like that scene where the cops go to the house and it's in silence for a few minutes.
Yeah.
I think that was really well done. Because there's a sound masking spell. So we get a silent scene until it's broken. But I really did like that scene. I thought it was very creative.
Yeah.
Stunts and everything. People flying over banisters and stuff. It was great. Windows collapsing in. It's good.
My main problem with this was the world building. It felt like they had some really clever ideas, but then just touched on them rather than really used them. Like this, I think this was sort of like one of the pitches was Harry Potter for grown-ups. And whilst there's a lot of issues with Harry Potter's portrayal of magic, you kind of believe, for the most part, the Wizarding World hangs together, whereas this doesn't. And there's places where it could have gone a lot further. Like, there's a scene where a judge sentences someone to have a dislocated arm, which you can do in the real world. It would have been interesting if they could have, you know, turned him into a badger.
I understand what you mean, but in order for that to happen in the real world, you need someone to do it to them, like, physically. And I think the idea of it happening, like, by magic is a good idea, but I think they should have went a little bit further with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Two arms? Give him, like, both arms or something, his legs? Make him fall to the ground and have to get carted out or crawl out or something. You know, go extreme with it. He's getting punishment for, what is it, murdering someone or something?
Yeah.
I can't remember. And all it is a dislocated arm. No. And the cop, Rizzo, stands up and says, it should be two arms! Like, yeah, okay.
It's, then like, the whole plot about the Stoics group, it's like, well, they sound quite reasonable, but also it's like, actually, if magic does work and can be demonstrated by the police, then their case is kind of null and void. And it just kind of feels like they're hitting you with a sledgehammer, but you're in a parallel, you know, magical realism.
Yeah, but I really did like that that silent scene towards the end.
Yeah, that was good.
Right. I'm going to go over my notes. Right. They use Teardrop by Massive Attack during the Necromancer scene. And I think this was a temp track, because currently on American TV, that was the theme tune to House, starring Hugh Laurie.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think that would have been used in another show. You can tell this is made, and well, I can tell this is made in Vancouver because it has a few.
Because it's raining.
Yeah, but it has a few background actors that are Canadian that I've seen in many other things that were filmed in Canada, like the black guy with the long sort of the short hair, but the long sort of dreads at the back. He's Canadian and he's in a lot of stuff that's filmed in Canada.
Obviously, Jamie Bamber, James Callis, Tricia Helfer were all on Battlestar Galactica. S.A. Morales was the lead character on Caprica, the Battlestar spin-off that only got a season.
Right, yeah.
But I first saw him in a show called... But I first saw him on a show called Jericho.
Oh, yeah.
Which was the one where the pretty TV actor-looking guy goes back home to his small town in the Midwest in time to see everywhere else get nuked.
Right, yeah.
Which famously got a second season thanks to fans sending in packets of peanuts.
Yep, I remember that. Never watched it, but I remember that. Well, here's a fun fact. Eamon Walker, who plays the chief, is English, but he's got a, you know, pretty solid American accent. And he was in Sickness and in Health back in the 80s for 3 series. He played Winston, a flamboyant gay black man who verbally sparred with Alf Garnett.
And, of course, Stockard Channing, presumably in her first role.
Yeah, yeah. No. She was in Grease when she was a teenager, so... Yeah, I think that's all my notes. That is all my notes! Yeah! So, have you got anything else to talk about on this craptacular episode of Drop the Pilot, Martin?
Well, I really enjoyed that they tried something different. And it's great that stuff like this is able to surface. You know, it's always good to sort of see a what if, especially if, you know, it's something that has some genre crossover with actors and writers from, you know, shows that you might be familiar with. He's done another pilot that was put out as a TV movie. It was on Netflix for a time called...
Virtuality?
Virtuality, which would be a great candidate for this podcast.
I really want to see it, yeah.
He did, I don't know if it was ever shot, but he did write a pilot for a Dragon Riders of Pern series.
All right. Says Jimmy, pretending to know what that is.
And it's like quite a well-known fantasy series.
It's
well-known from people saying that Ron Moore wrote a pilot for it.
Right.
I don't think it actually got shot, though.
Right.
Yeah, this is definitely the sort of thing... When you said, okay, I'm doing a pilot podcast, so I am. I'd hoped we'd get.
Mm-hmm. We've waded through a lot of shite to get here. And this isn't even great, it's just passable, but it's still something.
I'm going to write a police procedural, but it's set in a world where instead of Grim, Fisher was picked up.
Yeah.
And the baddies are going to be a terrorist group of Grim fans who found the pilot online.
I'm going to write a police procedural where everybody talks like this. Ooh! Although, if I did a police procedural where everybody talks like this, that would just be Taggart.
Yeah.
So, that's all we have time for. I'd like to thank Martin for joining me again.
You can find me at the Fowder on Twitter.
Yes, thank you, Martin. If you want to follow the podcast at Drop the Pilot Pod, and if you want, we have a website, shiftybench.co.uk, and if you like to contact us, it's contact@shiftybench.co.uk. Send us in some pilot suggestions or some suggestions about So What's the Problem, which is my other podcast. So I'd like to thank you all for listening, and we'll speak to you all next time. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Thank you.